you're going away, take 702 with you. Download the 702 app now.
Good evening and welcome to the show. You're listening to Gershwell Brooks here on Talk at 9. Great to be in your company, of course. And guess what? This is the last Talk at 9 for the year and for the decade. Because every time I say the last Talk at 9, people get very, very upset. But this is indeed the last Talk at 9 for this decade and for the year 2019. Can you imagine that? Time has flown. It's like I'm in denial. I don't know why. And I think that what happens is that, and I was thinking about this as I was driving in, because Lee, our producer, our executive producer, she's happy. She's like, hey, it's the end of the decade and all those other things. And I'm like, nah, I'm in denial. And I'm in denial because I think that I'm marching ever faster to my fourth decade on this planet. And that is a scary thought, guys. And especially when those funny, there's one or two of our ads that play that remind you of what happens to you when you get older. And I don't know, it's one of those things that scare me. In fact, one of the things that I did over this past weekend, and Butler will tell you whether I should be ashamed of myself or whether it's still reasonable and I can work with it. But I got onto the scale, Butler, and I weigh a solid 101 kilograms.
Oh, no, that's all right.
That's okay, that's isn't okay. I can work with it.
Yeah, you're fine.
Exactly, thank you. And in fact, I keep on telling people it's good, it's rugby weight.
We weigh the same, by the way.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Dude, I never thought I'd see the day. I never thought I'd see the day. But the reason why you're hearing Buchle's voice out of interest is we will be chatting in this first half an hour about the top sporting moments over this past decade. Because remember, I mentioned it just now, that indeed it is the end of a decade. And we thought that it's a good idea for us to sit down and think about some of the major things that have happened over the last 10 years, one of those being sports. And you know, as South Africans, we're crazy about sports. So we're going to do that as a bit of a rundown. And then after that, we're going to be chatting to the people from hashtag Proudly SA. Hashtag I'm staying. That's what I meant to say. Hashtag I'm staying. And it's a very interesting story that I'm definitely looking forward to. And part of it is because, of course, we've seen hashtag I'm staying doing the trends. And the key question for me is, what is the aim? What is the purport? Where does it come from? What is the idea behind it? And love it or hate it, it's definitely gained a lot of momentum. So I'm definitely looking forward to that conversation. And we have a bit of a surprise announcement to make during that conversation. And then, of course, we're going to look at this last decade of technical advancements with Toby Shapshak, who's the editor and publisher of the South African edition of Stuff magazine. And you would very well know that, the last 10 years, if you have to think, and I was actually trying to remember this. I mean, it was 10 years ago when I think I started becoming aware of Facebook, by the way. Just sort of knowing that it exists. I wasn't even on the thing. Since then to now, what has developed, what has happened? Now we're talking about the fourth industrial revolution. And then last and not least, just before we get to the 11 o'clock Eyewitness News, we will be looking at a year in pictures with Bori Lekhranshi, who is the head of communications at Doctors Without Borders, or MSF. We're going to look at some of the photos that they're going to be sending us, and also having a conversation about what those photos have captured, just to remind us of sort of the world that we're living in, because we know that MSF does some wonderful work for people who are in need at the best of times. So looking up at the time, it's 9 minutes past 9 o'clock. Of course, lines are open throughout the course of the show. 011-883-0702. 317, and of course also for our Cape Talk listeners, 021-446-0567. SMSs are taken on 31567 and 31702 respectively, and WhatsApp, same number for everyone, 072-702-1702. Give it a little bit, because pretty soon what I will be doing is I will be tweeting out what's coming up in the show, also tagging some of the people, and all you have to do there is look for hashtag talk at 9 a little later on. That's what will be happening. Looking up at the time, it's 10 minutes past 9 o'clock. You heard his voice already. He's sitting across from me. He just finished the show and he's a kind gentleman and an absolute scholar for deciding to join us in studio and have a chat about some of the highlights that we've seen from the last 10 years. 10 minutes past nine. Good evening to you, Buhle.
Good evening, Gersh. Good to be on your show.
Lekker, man.
Yeah.
Dude, this is the second time I've invited you to my show.
It is.
And you, not the second, but I mean the second thematically, I guess.
Yes.
So now when am I getting?
You even got to host my show, Kashol. So I mean, you've got one on me, actually.
Technically, I do. Technically,
so,
I do.
I think it's fair.
I think I should just keep quiet, sit back in my corner, isn't it? Yeah. And listen, I can give you some great analysis on many things.
I know.
But I'm very biased. I think that's my problem, is that I would never be a great sports journal. I'm the guy that would be asking the guys at Ferrari, so, you know, how does it feel to lose to Mercedes all the time?
Because, you know, you want to know.
Yeah, you know.
Yes.
Telling the Bulls, are you guys ready to lose? Because, you know, we rule the side of the XK.
We are coming for
you. Yeah, that type of stuff. Yeah, so it wouldn't work
out. No. But I mean, you know, the thing with sports journalism, Gersh, uh-huh. And I think maybe I'm looking at it in a 21st century point of view, mm-hmm. but I think you don't have to be impartial. You can support a team. It's just your reporting must be impartial. So you must give all sides of the story.
The thing is, I think I find it very difficult to be that impartial dude, that guy that just comes in and says that, listen, okay, I'm going to look at this straight down the line. And look at it from a perspective of pure analysis and just the love of the game. I'm always in support of a particular team. And I think, you know, that's when I'll call out the ref and do all kinds of stuff. Stuff that will basically get me fired in the first day of the job. But, I mean, getting into it, we are talking about the last decade, the highlights from the last decade. I'm going to go straight from... I'm going to come out with it immediately. For me, the single biggest highlight, and this is why I would be a bad sports journalist, is because there's no teaser, there's no lead up, there's no build up. I'm going to come out straight and say the biggest highlight for me was definitely the 2019 World Cup victory led by Siya Kolisi.
It cannot be anyone else's, can't be on any other number, but number one on anyone else's list. It is absolutely the biggest thing that's happened this decade to South Africa, to South African sport, mm-hmm. Without a doubt. Without a doubt. I agree with you fully. And for it to be under the guidance of a person like Siya Kolisi, who's now become a world-famous superstar. He's a world sensation. Cool. He's watching NBA games and signing for Roc Nation and doing all these things. And also under the leadership of Rassie Erasmus. So absolutely. And 2019 was a year that a lot of us wouldn't have imagined the Bucks would have been at the top of the world. And here they are. It has to be your biggest highlight.
But Buffle, the one thing that stands out for me is that, I mean, the name Rassie Erasmus has been doing the rounds forever. And the one thing I couldn't, I mean, I watched Rassie Erasmus playing both flank and eighth man for the Free State, the Cheetahs, and I also watched him as a Springbok, of course. Mm. And I always liked the guy's game. And he, for me, was one of the better sort of players that came out of that era where rugby just became professional, especially in South Africa, right? And the one thing that always stood out for me was that his name, they kept on mentioning his name, you know, as part of being sort of the Springbok setup. And he just wasn't coming forward, or it wasn't, the timing was just never right. And I always wondered, what is so amazing about this guy? And look at him, within 2 years, literally.
Yeah.
2 years and some change. This is what he managed to pull off.
Well, he's always been a special person, Rassie Erasmus. I've never played with him, but obviously, but people...
But we're a bit too young.
We're a bit too young. But people who have played with him will tell you this. From the time of him being a player, he was the kind of guy who paid special attention to details that the average player doesn't pay special attention to. So he was already thinking like a coach, already as a player. He was looking for those little gaps. He was looking for, you know, the chinks in the armor that he could find as a player on the field. And it would have been, I mean, it's fantastic to have a leader like that. And then, I mean, do you remember Rassie Erasmus sitting on the roof at Free State Stadium with the cards, he had a red and I think it was green, mm-hmm. and he would signal the red or the green every time a certain play had to happen. Now I can't remember the time, but it was when he was in charge of the Cheetahs and he led them to Carrick Cup glory. But he was that kind of a coach. He was the kind of a coach who was next level. So you'd look up and you'd see, okay, cool, it's a green play, and you have a green play, which means whatever the forwards take the ball, down the back line, or whatever the case is. So already, you know, he's always been a very special brain in rugby. We saw what he did when he went to England, to the UK. He was fantastic. He's always been there and thereabout in the Springbok setup as well.
He's
they have used him as a consultant on numerous occasions. But we just weren't aware of exactly how great this man is until we saw him as a World Cup winning coach. Yeah,
and he didn't have the easiest start. I mean, we could basically talk about this guy all the way through to when we have to end this interview. But the one thing that stood out for me is that even as a player, he was never physically imposing.
No.
He was never the guy that was a smasher and a breaker, but he was always, you know, up here. It was always upstairs in the brains. And he was just absolutely phenomenal in that particular space. So well done to him. Well done to Sia. Well done to the rest of the team for what they managed to pull off in Japan. I mean, it's just absolutely stunning.
Yeah.
I thought about this one long and hard. The second one that stands out for me, and that is, of course, the fact that we hosted the Soccer World Cup. Because I wasn't sure, does 2010 qualify for this decade or the previous decade? But either way, that by far should be our second highlight.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's no doubt that that should be number two on our list.
You know, and that that goal that still does the rounds with Peter Drury screaming Jabu Lila. And, but, you know, it was a fantastic moment for South Africa. Siphiwe Tshabalala scoring that opening goal against Mexico, the first goal of the World Cup, an absolute screamer. But just hosting the World Cup on its own, everyone remembers the 2010 World Cup. You remember where you were at some stage?
Let me explain to you. I've never been a soccer fan.
Yeah.
And I remember my friends from university. You know, because it was almost like a lottery effect. You bid for tickets, right? You put yourself into a pool, and then what would end up happening is that they would then sort of allocate games to you, right?
Yeah.
And then you pay for those particular games. So you couldn't say that because they knew everyone would want to watch the final. Everyone would want to watch Bafana Bafana games. Everyone would want to watch Brazil, et cetera, et cetera. That type of thing. So you could easily end up watching, I'm not saying that they were here, but Montenegro versus Cape Verde or something.
Yeah.
So all my mates were like, dude, you need to get tickets. And I was like, no, I'm not interested. You know, sure, it's soccer. I'm not a soccer guy, whatever. Did I have FOMO that day? Because I had it on the soccer in my living room. And when Tshabalala scored that goal, dude, I screamed so much I went hoarse. I absolutely went hoarse.
Yeah.
And that for me was just exactly what it was. I mean, and I live in a relatively quiet neighborhood, you know? And the one thing that stood out for me was those vuvuzelas going on.
In the neighborhood.
It was just everyone. It was as if the whole city came to a stop. The whole nation came to a stop. And just boop, 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 boop. That's all that you heard everywhere. And that for me is what I can remember. It was definitely a highlight. And again, that unity that it brought. I mean, similar to this World Cup victory, 2010, I think even in a bigger way, if I'm not mistaken, brought South Africans together in no uncertain terms.
Yeah, I actually also do think it was in a big way because that really touched every corner of the country. People were able to be part of it, you know, whether you are in Nelspruit or down in the Cape or wherever you are, Messina, you were able to be part of it and you could really feel it. It was here, you know, and it was.
And Philip was here.
Philip was here. 2010, I think, in some people's minds will be an even better memory than the Rugby World Cup victory. A lot of people really had a good time in 2010. And it was amazing to have the world here on our shores. And we treated them quite well, I think.
I'm going to give it, third place is going to go to two.
Okay.
Right? Caster Semenya.
Yes.
And Wade van Niekerk.
Oh, I mean, they are one in the same in terms of South African athletics.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
But
brilliant.
The one sort of ticks me off to this day.
Why does Wade van Niekerk annoy you?
He annoys the living daylights out of me.
Because he plays such rugby.
Rugby. Bra.
You know, Gersh.
It's one of those where you want to sit down with a guy and I will go home. And for the people listening right now that understand what I mean by I will go home, I will go back to my ghetto roots. And I'll sit down with him and I'll be like, bra.
Vatma.
Vatma. Dunkabiki. You know. What on earth was
but
that?
But I have to feel for him. I have to feel for him. He was just playing a game of touch. It's like the cricketers play some touch or some football before the match starts as warm-up. It was a game of touch, man. And his cousins with Herschel Yankees. Why wouldn't he be playing touch? Leave the man alone. And he was apparently quite a good rugby player. I mean, you can imagine with so much pace. But let's go back to those two moments that you're talking about. And for me, Wade van Niekerk, The Rio 2016 Olympics is when he really made his mark on the scene. Caster Semenya, we had already really known about him, but he obliterated a world record, claimed gold. It was a run that none of us expected. He was in the outside lane, and he just... Oh, it was insane.
Yeah, it was crazy. And that was the thing. He didn't even have the advantage of being in the middle lane or whatever the case was.
Exactly.
He was in the outside lane, which is technically the longer run.
The more difficult run. Mm. You've got more of an arc that you need to deal with, that you need to contend with. So it's a lot harder for you.
It was an angle.
It was the angle. He used it. You know, he had his jet shoes. We're hoping to see him back on the track sooner rather than later. You know, the injuries haven't really stopped. Since that injury, it's been one after the other.
Hey.
And Wade van Niekerk hasn't actually been in serious competition since then. Caster Semenya, 2012 in London is when she announced herself to the world. And I'll never forget when she won that 800 meters gold in London. Mm, and then she did the same thing in Rio. And it was just a matter of Lindsay Sharp complaining all the time because this woman, Caster Semenya, was amazing.
You're calling it complaining. I'll call it what it is. And hopefully I don't get fired for it. It was bitching and moaning.
Yeah.
Being a little crybaby about the fact that someone is beating you. I mean, it's literally... Look, he does a lot of it himself. What's his name? This guy, Vettel.
Yeah,
he bitches and moans all the time.
Yeah.
He's always crying about, you know... especially to his team. Yeah, especially to his team. But the issue is, this year is just unfathomable. I mean, you know, here you have a clearly superior athlete,
yeah,
who is a woman,
yeah,
who's dominating the sport. And you know, there's so many other cases that one can point to. And yet they're making this big fuss about Caster Semenya. And I should say, just quite frankly, I feel that it's only now recently, in the last 2 years or so, that I think that the world has been, or not the world, or part of the world, has been trying to treat Caster Semenya with a little more respect,
yeah,
and a little more fairness. Because prior to this, let's be quite honest, Buchle, I mean, it was absolute nonsense. I mean, I'll never forget or forgive the Drum magazine fiasco where they decided to put on a pretty dress for her and do all kinds of things. Mm. You see, she can also be a woman, you know? And it was so contrary to her gender identity, to her expression,
to who
she is. And you know, today she's happy and she is who she is. She's still very quiet, very shy, and still fighting this battle because, you know, some guys in the world have decided that they're going to determine the rules for what constitutes a woman.
And I like the fact that you say some guys, some men in the world, sitting very pretty on a high perch, have decided that, she's not woman enough. She must run with the men. But that's a story for a different day. Right now, we're celebrating the excellence she is. And she's been, what a good ambassador as well, Caster Semenya, for South Africa, even for us, for our kids looking at her. It's absolutely fantastic. And how she's taken all of this, knock on the chin, she moves on and she keeps her head up high. So it's very nice to see. But she definitely deserves to be on that list. And you say she's number third with Wade van Niekerk.
Tied at number three for me in terms of the top headlines. Now, before we highlights rather.
Yeah.
Before we get to number four, the one thing that I want to sort of put out there, and you'll tell me whether I'm right or wrong. It's not featured anywhere on our list that we're discussing. But what sort of stands out for me as a bit of a disappointment is that I can't look back at this decade and look at a single moment of boxing genius where I can turn around and say, this is the fight that I'm going to talk about. I'll never forget prior to the Pacquiao, after the Manny Pacquiao fight and the, Mayweather.
Mayweather
fight. I wrote an opinion piece for the Daily Maverick, and it was basically scathing the fight. I mean, it was just a nonsense fight.
It was.
It was Mayweather running for all of those rounds.
Yeah.
Pacquiao just can't figure out what to do with this guy. You know, clearly didn't go in with brains, just went in with brawn and just wanted to punch the living daylights out or punch the guy's head off.
Mm.
And, you know, you couldn't knock his block off because Mayweather kept on running for the entire, 12 rounds?
Yeah, yeah.
When the entire 12 rounds, running and running from one end to the other, and it ended with nothing significant. And obviously Mayweather ended up winning that particular fight. But what I then compared it to, and this is what sort of hurts my feelings, And I think the feelings of anyone that even watches boxing casually is that you go back to the days of Ali and Foreman, you know, the Rumble in the Jungle, dude. I mean, no one can get away from that.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of the greatest fights ever. I actually had a debate with the editor and he said, no, the Rumble in the Jungle wasn't the greatest fight ever.
Did you watch Rumble in the Jungle?
No, but you know what? He actually, he knows his boxing, dude. Yeah. He took me back to the 1940s and schooled me.
Wow.
But what I'm just getting at is that we can't talk about that anymore. That day is not there, you know? That feeling. That passion, that walking away from a boxing match and saying, geez, that was the best thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that guys end up in hospital after the fact and all that other jazz.
Yeah, but I mean, a boxing match, pound for pound, is supposed to be entertaining. It's supposed to be thrilling. And generally, you don't really, you know, the problem with us non-traditionalists, we sort of want to take the heavyweights because heavyweight is slugging, it's big hits, it's, you know, but there's not too much tactic that's involved in that. But when you actually watch a good fight tactically, then you really start to enjoy it. So the Mayweather fight, unfortunately, the way it was billed, the way they had previewed it, the talks ahead of the fight, they made it seem like it was going to be this massive slog fest, this action round for round. And I don't blame Mayweather. I understand why you're upset. I was too. I was livid. But I don't blame Mayweather for ensuring the win instead of trying to put on a spectacle. Because that's essentially what you do. You know, first things first, let's get the W on the board and then we can make it look pretty. And that's what he did.
And in boxing, you only have 12 rounds. The chances are you're probably only going to, even in that final round, because you know you could still get knocked out.
So
you're going to secure your W no matter what. And look, the thing for me about it is, and I still maintain, I said it in that opinion piece, I'll say it now again. I think that Manny Pacquiao had been calling out Mayweather for years. Mayweather waited for the guy to be past his sell-by date and then fought him.
Yes.
That's the unfortunate truth. And again, another way in which he managed to secure his W. For me, at number four, Tiger Woods. I know that he was on you and Zach van Heerden's injury list for every single show.
Before you move on to Tiger Woods, I just want to talk about, in boxing, I think, to look at, for me, comeback of the decade, Tyson Fury in boxing. He, the Gypsy King, almost nowhere. And
can I tell you a secret about the Gypsy King?
Yeah.
Dude, I only recently, because I mean, I've heard this name Tyson Fury, and I was like, oh, this guy must be a monster. And then I Googled him.
And you saw him.
And I was like,
looks like he has too many pies.
Wait, dude, he looks like, honestly, it's like that guy that you see at the pub.
Yeah,
you know, it's drinking nothing but he's drinking nothing but pints, eating chips, you know, and it just looks like he looks sloppy, man. He doesn't look like a boxing champ.
Yeah.
But gee, I mean, the guy is phenomenal.
He is phenomenal. He did very well when he fought Deontay Wilder. When was it? Last year, I believe. And now they're gonna have a rematch next year. We'll see how that one goes. But he was nowhere. He was very overweight. He hadn't been in the boxing gym for a long time. Nobody gave him a chance against Deontay Wilder. He was dropped 3 times in the match, but he still actually outboxed the guy. And I think it ended in a split decision. But what a boxer Tyson Fury is. As you say, you wouldn't give him a chance. It's like Andy Ruiz. When you looked at Andy Ruiz for the first time against Anthony Joshua, you'd say, oh, well, this is
going to be this one here.
A walkover.
But then he came back.
Then he came back.
He clearly liked the KFC, dude.
The second time around, he was eating the winning money, clearly.
That's
all he was doing. The wins that he got, he just ate all of that.
When people talk about eating your money, he was eating his money.
In the literal sense of the word.
No, that was a mess. Yeah.
It was. Shame. It was.
Yes.
You want to talk Tiger Woods?
Tiger Woods, I mean, for me, another controversy.
Whew.
I'll never forget that press conference after, the wife took a couple of golf clubs to him, and he had that accident, inverted commas, and I just thought this was the end of a career, and I saw the conspiracy theorists coming out, and, you know, a black man can't have any success. I'm like, dude, he's been successful for a very long time, and
he's been the highest paid athlete for years.
I mean, he has a lot of money in the bank. He doesn't need to come back. He could have just retired then and said, you know, thank you very much, and live a very happy life by himself in Ireland, probably.
Yeah.
And just, you know, continue. But guess what? Lo and behold, the guy comes back. And I thought, when listening to you and Zach van Heerden again, I thought, this is a waste of everyone's time. I mean, this is just an absolute waste of time. And then lo and behold, this guy pulls it off. And I mean, he does what he does. I mean, that was phenomenal.
That was absolutely phenomenal. And I mean, the fact that you that he only won a single major. He's got 15 major wins. Only one of them he claimed in the 2010s, so to speak. The one before that was in 2007, I think, was the PGA Championship. So it had been a while that we hadn't seen the best of Tiger Woods. I mean, to think from 2007, Gersh, up until 2019, 12 years, he was sitting on 14 majors. I mean, he had a tumultuous time. He had a tumultuous last 10 years. It's a decade for him to forget. But the man that actually is known as Aldrick Tont Woods, by the way. That's his real name.
I didn't even know that. And I know quite a bit about the guy because I watched documentaries about how he was raised, his father, pushing him. Because, Oprah sort of claims everyone. She adopts everyone after the fact. And he was one of those after-the-fact Oprah adoptees, right?
Yeah.
And, I mean, she did sort of a full life profile on this guy. And his dad literally took him from when he was a toddler and sort of drummed golf into this guy beyond what you can believe. And, I mean, the stuff that the guy was doing at the age of 8 would put you and I and most of our friends who've ever picked up golf clubs to shame.
And rightfully so. I mean, he was a fantastic talent, as you're saying, groomed from a young age. And rightfully so. 15 majors now. He's still chasing 18 of Jack Nicklaus. It looks further and further away from it. Looks more and more unlikely. Most recently, he was playing the President's Cup, leading America to victory, but he only played 2 rounds there. We know the spinal fusion has had.
Yeah.
All the problems with that. And he really can't play to his best anymore. It's very hard for him to do 4 rounds, 18 holes, and get them all under par. He struggles with that. And I don't know if we'll ever see the best of Tiger Woods ever again. Whether he'll win another major is yet to be seen. But at least he signed off 2019, or at least the decade in style. I mean, I still think,
I mean, it's sort of like Ali going back to the boxing stuff. You know, Ali basically retired, comes back. Remember, not really retired. I mean, the guy was forced into retirement at the time because remember he was in a world of trouble for being a draft dodger during the Vietnam War. Was basically forced out of, professional sports. Yeah. Comes back almost a decade later. Everyone writes the guy off and says, listen, you're old. You can't do this.
Yeah.
And then the guy comes back and he shocks the world by A, reclaiming the title, of course, and fine, he had a couple of moments then, but unfortunately, age had caught up with him. And I mean, that's the same here with Tiger Woods, especially after spinal surgery after spinal surgery. I'm surprised the guy can still walk. I mean, that's phenomenal. Look, mate, number 5, I was going through this list. Number 5 is tough to determine.
Yeah.
So can I make a suggestion?
Yeah.
A very unsporty suggestion.
You clearly aren't a journalist, a sports journalist. You keep on proving this this fact.
No, I was going to be nice. I was going to say, let's combine all the leftovers into that number 5
into
spot.
Into number 5. Okay, sure.
Look, I surprised you there, didn't I? I surprised you
A little bit, a little bit. But in saying that, Gershwal, there's a lot of things not here. And there are a lot of things that other people feel stood out for them. By all means, they are more than entitled to feeling that way. And I'm sure you engage them on that. But I think we could combine the rest. I mean, some of them are also just really feel good of these numbers. It might have not been something that would have changed the world or South Africans' world in particular, but it's something that really has made the country feel good at some stage.
And you know what? In fact, you gave me a wonderful idea there for the open line just after 11 o'clock. I'd like to hear from people listening to us having this moment of sheer excitement about the last decade's worth of sport. What stood out for you in the last decade? Of course, there's plenty of other stuff that we can, there's a long list of things that we can go through and
something we might not even think of.
From the 1940s, boxing from the 40s. But I'm saying in this last decade, from 2010 up until 2019, the end of 2019, what is that one special sporting moment that stood out for you? It could be bowls. It could be lawn bowls, and we don't know. There was probably one South African 75-year-old that managed to curve the ball at 90 degrees and,
A world record.
Yeah, a world record and do something amazing. I don't know what the aim quite is in lawn bowls, but hey, maybe.
Absolutely. I mean, you've got like Kagiso Rabada's best test figures of 13, I think, for 100 and something or whatever the wickets, runs were. But
the South African cricket squad, I mean, and maybe part of it is the reason why I didn't mention the protest is because I'm still hurting from the last World Cup.
Yes.
I'm really happy over the Boxing Day victory, by the way, the Boxing Day test victory.
Yeah.
I'm really happy over that. But, I mean, it still hurts that we got an absolute thrashing.
It does.
At the World Cup. But, I mean, we were, for a while, the number one test side in the world. And if I'm not mistaken, the number one one-day side in the world in this last decade. I mean, it was, in fact, in the last decade, we always were the promising team. But unfortunately, you know, we have the one Achilles heel.
Yeah, we don't do World Cups. I think we should just stop playing World Cups and just settle for number one in the world.
Yeah.
Because that's good enough, really. I mean, we're the best in the world.
To number one and then... I mean, it's like the All Blacks. Yeah. Number one rugby team in the world.
That's all that matters.
Did they win the World Cup?
No, we did.
All Black fans.
And English fans... English fans are going to say the same thing about being us mean? Being happy. So, who won the World Cup? Not us. Yes, you're being mean. You're being mean.
But dude, I think that, look, it's just been absolutely amazing as a year. As I said, I could probably finish this entire show just chatting to you, but I'm looking up and Lee is looking a bit grim there. I still have a spot to take and we'll have to leave it at that. But I mean, is there one thing that you just want to mention, one thing that stood out for you from all of those easy sort of low-hanging fruit? Is there something else that maybe you feel that we could have mentioned this, we could have thought about that one?
Yeah, well, you know what, from things that we didn't mention, and I think this stands out, especially from a golfing perspective, because I am quite a fan, is the fact that we've had three major victories in the last decade. We've had three South Africans who've won majors. Ernie Els won the British Open, Louis Oosthuizen won the British Open, and Charles Schwartzel won the US Masters, which are major events. I mean, it's like winning a Grand Slam. It's like winning Wimbledon, and for South African to have done that is fantastic. So I think our golfers, we've always had very good golfers in this country, and we continue to produce them.
No, I think that for me is just absolutely stunning. Again, this little country at the bottom of the African continent that keeps on producing and making headlines on the global stage, especially in sports. That for me is what stands out. We could have discussed Miss Universe, but that's not quite sports.
It's not quite sporty.
The return of Goldberg. WWE, not quite sports. I was very excited, by the way. I was.
Yes.
I was for a glimmer there.
Yes.
And then I remembered it's not quite real. But yeah, I would never say that to them. Listen, dude, we're completely out of time. We'll have to leave it there. 23 minutes to go before we get to 10.